And so to what may seem a bit of rivalry in physics, this time with quantum computing. In Australia, as former Australian of the Year Michelle Simmons recounted in her recent Boyer lectures, how they like to pick up single atoms in silicon as a basis for computing. But at UCLA, as Professor of Physics and Astronomy Eric Hudson explains, they use different methods.
Yeah, the difference is in how you get those individual atoms to be in position and to be able to manipulate them. We use what are called trapped ion systems. So we configure some electrodes inside of a vacuum chamber. We apply electric fields to those electrodes and use that to trap the ions in space. In some sense, it's very similar to the silicon approach in that there are electric fields of these crystals holding effectively electrons or nuclei in place. It's just that instead of using silicon substrate, we're using these electrodes. A potential advantage is that the atoms are then held in vacuum, so they're not being bothered by any other things in the substrate, whereas in the silicon, there can be crystal effects. Now, the other side of that coin is that our systems are big and man-made and kind of bulky to trap these atoms, whereas if you can do it in silicon, then you have the atomic cage, if you will, trapping for you. So you could be much smaller and maybe more scalable.
And ways in which that, in fact, codes for whatever you want, like transistors might, which is also a mysterious thing to some of us, you have a system which can then be so much more powerful than conventional computers. When it comes to all these different systems around the world approaching in different ways, have they all reached in sight of the finishing line?
It depends on where you put the finishing line. I would say the finishing line that most of us are pushing for right now are to get to systems that are undeniably in the quantum regime. And what I mean by that are systems that have enough quantum bits or qubits that you cannot in any conceivable way simulate what they would do on a classical computer. A number of years ago, some people claimed to be in that regime, and then the classical simulation caught up with them. But with the scaling of the problem, by the time you get to, let's say, 100 or maybe 200 of these quantum bits, these qubits, fully controlled, there's just no conceivable way that you can simulate this classically. And so most of the systems are getting very close to that finish line right now. Some people have that number of qubits, but don't quite have the control. Others have the control, but not quite that many qubits. So I think in the next, I would say, 2 years or so, we're going to move into that fully quantum regime. Now, the finish line that many people may think of as using some Shor's algorithm to break encryption or simulating molecular structure for solving chemical problems on a quantum computer, that is further away. Is that a 10-year problem or a 30-year problem? I don't think anyone knows. It requires technology that we don't really have right now. We think we know how to build it, so it's an adventure.
Indeed, and the suggestion is that we all have a picture of the computer on your desk over there. You know, are we going to have an object that we can call a computer? There's going to be a quantum one, and will that be something that you can buy or your firm can, via the cloud, have access to? And Michelle Simmons says perhaps 10 years that might be possible.
In some sense, that already exists, right? So there are many companies that will sell you a quantum computer. They will also sell you cloud access to that quantum computer right now. So that's certainly the model that I think is the foreseeable one. The quantum computers right now are at the stage where they're mostly learning devices. So if you have a company and you think that, hey, someday quantum computing could solve some important problems for us, we need to train ourselves how to use them, how to interface with them, how to think about quantum algorithms. People are doing that now. In the next couple of years, those things will, as I said, will be completely in the quantum regime. And so, you know, there'll be a bigger draw to access them. But yeah, they'll be on the cloud. They're not going to be in your pocket anytime soon.
Big pocket, yeah. But you described your own approach here at UCLA. And what about your own personal line, apart from running a big department with astronomy attached? What is your favorite part in this scheme?
So the thing that we work on, this is actually a really interesting question, I think. And what is the role of an academic when you have an industry that has popped up? Companies investing 100x academics spend on research. They have 100x the number of people. what should a poor professor do to help out? And it's an interesting place we're in the quantum field, and that is there's still much basic research to be done, but we can't actually do that basic research without the technology of industry. And so the field, in some ways, I would say, has been slowed by the siloedness that we have in the way we do science in the world today. You know, there's industry, there's government, there's academia. And although there are certainly counterexamples, the interplay between those three is not what it should be. So you have industry who can't really do basic research because they have shareholders or investors and they have timelines they have to hit. You have academics who don't have the technology to really do all of the basic research. And so what we do here, we try to work on the basic research ideas that could make all of this much, much easier. But they're a little too wacky or a little too crazy to convince investors or shareholders to allow you to do. That's sort of one thing. And then the other thing we've done is establishing this research park near campus. The idea is that we're going to have academics and industry working together under the same roof. And part of that is a purely human one. When you go to work in the same building, eat at the same cafeteria with someone, then you really become peers and you start communicating, talking over lunch, over coffee. And we hope to break down that silo with a few choice industry partners to really facilitate the basic research transfer out of academia to industry, but then also transfer the technology of industry into academia so that we can help with the basic research problems.
Sounds very exciting. You've actually bought Chopping Mall, where you've got this kind of... Is it set up yet, or is it going to be set up pretty soon?
So it is in the process of being set up for research. It's about 2 years away from opening labs. The building itself has been renovated on the exterior. All the sort of seismic things have been brought up to code. And we're at the point now of putting, where's the drywall going to go to define the labs? And that takes about a year or two.
And which parts of industry do you think might join you there?
Within the research park, there's going to be work on immunology, which I'm not involved in, and then also work in quantum. So we are very fortunate that a company here in Los Angeles called HRL, used to be Hughes Research Lab, will be our first anchor tenant in this building. They work on your silicon spin qubits. So they'll be establishing a research effort that's both, you know, academic and industry around that. And we're working with some other partners who prefer not to be named right now on bringing in other technologies.
Now, I did mention to you before the amazing earnings of Cambridge in Britain. Their park has been superbly successful because there's this proximity of people working together. And that synergy is something you're surprised in some ways not to see ubiquitously because the examples are being so convincing. So you don't have to live in hope. There are examples.
We've certainly looked to those guys with a bit of envy and for inspiration. A lot of it is just human nature. We end up being physically siloed and therefore it leads to intellectual siloing. And, you know, by getting under the same roof, working together, it creates the motivation for the science. And so then when the attorneys get involved and there's weird questions about IP, people figure them out. They don't let that stop them anymore. And so that's really what the hub is about. We hope it will drive that sort of economic growth for Southern California. I mean, we have the companies here, we have the academics here, so we just have to figure out how to work together.
Good luck. Thank you. I'll be back in 2 years.
Sounds great. I look forward to hosting you there.
And I shall be there. Eric Hudson, Professor of Physics and Astronomy at the University of California, Los Angeles.